Welcome, ladies.
Hi, thank you, Emily. I just want to say a quick thank you to Autumn for the opportunity to share our experiences with hosting technology showcases. This slide is just a disclaimer stating that the content of this webinar does not reflect those of Northwestern University or the University of Illinois. So let's get started here. Hello, my name is Sonia Kim of the Innovation Adventures Office, or INVO, at Northwestern University, and I'm here with colleagues from the University of Illinois' Office of Technology Management, Nicole Nair, Svetlana Sowers, and Heather Jones, and with my colleague Lisa Darr of Northwestern. Today, we'll be discussing our experiences in hosting technology showcases, sharing some practical tips and lessons learned. As many of you know, technology showcases come in all flavors, and you'll see a wide range of them from universities all over the country. And we've definitely benefited from these past experiences of many colleagues over the years, and we hope that today's webinar will serve as another link in passing on their and our information. So for today's seminar, we'll be focusing on showcases that seek to put the spotlight on the opportunities afforded by university-based research. And based on its latest studies, Autumn has found that the impact of innovations arising from our universities are really profound. Over 200 new drugs, treatments, and vaccines used today originated from universities. And over the last 20 years, university research has contributed over $590 billion to the U.S.'s GDP. The showcases we'll be discussing today reflect the technology pipeline emerging from our universities and how they will continue to be a driver of innovation. Nicole and Lisa, both the University of Illinois and Northwestern have hosted a series of showcases, individually and together, over the past few years. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Hi, Sonia. This is Nicole. Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening today. I was going to talk about Share the Vision, which is an event that we've been hosting hosting here at the University of Illinois since about 2012. To give credit where it's due, it was actually championed by Lisa and also one of our former directors. Share the Vision is an event that aims simply to increase the interest in the university's pipeline and to draw attendees to Champaign. We typically hold this event every 18 to 24 months. It used to be every 18 months. We kind of increased that to every 24 months. It combines faculty and startups. We've held it in just about every different format. We've had one single track, two simultaneous tracks. We've had a very focused concentration on a research area. We've also been very broad. We've had only faculty presenters and then faculty and startups, one day, 2 days, with various add-ons. So, you know, the format has evolved, but it's always in service of the same goal, again, increasing interest and awareness of the university's pipeline.
Oh, great. And then this is Lisa from Northwestern, and I'll mention a recently launched showcase that Northwestern has initiated as an example of another type of showcase. So starting last year, we decided to hold a short showcase in San Francisco during the week of one of the largest healthcare investor conferences that's held in the United States. I officially am not supposed to use the name of the conference, but I'm sure that everyone can guess what it is. It's held in San Francisco the first full week of January, and as I'm sure all of you know, it brings to town every major investor and company and essentially shuts down San Francisco. So we wanted to build an event that could leverage the audience that comes to town. And so we hosted a cocktail event during the early evening of one of those conference days, anchored by short presentations from a few of our faculty and then facilitated networking with about a dozen of our startups who were in town for the conference. So, again, a different format than Share the Vision, but really to the same end in terms of highlighting the visibility of technologies emerging from the universities and startups emerging for the university. We'll be holding it again this January and are mixing up the format a little bit. We'll retain the network with startups, but have a panel discussion instead of the anchor presentations that we had last time. And then the final type of showcase we'll mention as an example and as a point of reference for today's webinar is something that has been named Illinois Ignite, and that took place for the first time just about a month and a half ago. And we've included it as an example of a multi-institution showcase. So in the past few years, the state of Illinois has been putting a lot of emphasis on efforts that can bring together the major research institutions in the state. And so one thought was if we could host a showcase that highlighted the prominent and innovative research faculty from the different institutions and the startups that emerged, it really could be a draw for potential investors and corporate partners. So this past month, Illinois Ignite included ourselves, the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, University of Chicago, University of Illinois at Chicago, and IIT. We'll talk a little bit more about the details of all these showcases, but really wanted to provide these as points of reference for the rest of the webinar.
Thanks. So as Lisa just said, we'll be weaving in the experiences from these three showcases into today's presentation. And some of the points we'll be covering are just general considerations if you decide to host a showcase, and then some specifics regarding event format, attracting an audience, engaging your presenters, managing logistics leading up to and during the day of your event, and finally, looking at the results, impacts, and outcomes of the event. So why don't we start with the first? Lisa and Nicole, can you tell us what considerations went into starting a showcase at Illinois, University of Illinois, in 2012?
Oh, sure. So the first and main goal, as Nicole had mentioned, was to bring visibility to the institution and really sort of build a brand of University of Illinois being a go-to place for innovation. And so that really, I think, launched what we restarted as Share the Vision while I was there. It became, I think, as Nicole will talk about more, sort of a landing point for external partners, you know, becoming a sort of a recurring event that investors and partners knew that they could come and network with many of our inventors. It really helps in creating momentum for offering exposure and networking for the participants. So as you'll see through the webinar, there's lots of touch points at these showcases for your faculty to faculty and startups to really start meeting the participants. And the eventual goal for initiating that showcase was to lay the seeds for relationships that could eventually lead to hopefully investments in startups or licenses or sponsored research. But as you'll see, showcases are really going to become, you know, one more tool in your arsenal of networking opportunities. So I think for all these considerations, you know, we decided to sort of reinitiate the Share the Vision effort at University of Illinois. But one of the sort of unintended consequences was how much it meant internally, and I think Nicole had some great points on that.
Yeah, I was just going to say it wasn't something I had really anticipated when we first started doing these, but, you know, it does raise your profile on campus. I mean, the faculty and administration who participate, and appreciate the event, not only are they now feeling positive about it, but they kind of carry that message back to other people on campus as well. One way we've seen that play out is that I think the first time we did Share the Vision, we really had to sell faculty a little more on participating and wanting to be part of the event. And as time has gone on, it's been much easier to explain what the event is and for people to kind of, you know, from the get-go want to participate. It also might be the only place on your campus or institution, you know, that showcases faculty or research or emerging innovations across departments and colleges, making it, you know, kind of a unique event on your campus. At least it is for us. It shows your office as being proactive. And actually, some of the enthusiasm is from unanticipated quarters as well. Our news bureau, the reporters from our news bureau, are always among the first people to sign up for the event. And it's because they find it a great well for story ideas. And I, you know, certainly had never thought of it that way. We've also had faculty ask us if their classes, sometimes in business and entrepreneurship, can come and sit in on the event as well. So these are things we hadn't anticipated, but they are great internal PR.
Nicole, do you want to comment also on some of the challenges of hosting a tech showcase?
Yeah, so when you're considering, whether this is something you want to do, I think first and foremost, just to be aware of the time commitment involved in something like this. It really takes a lot of time to put it together. And we found it usually involves on a couple of different levels. So there's usually a core team. For Ignite, it was everyone on this call. And then for Share the Vision, it's the three of us from Urbana, and usually Heather and I handling, for Share the Vision, logistics and kind of the general setup, and then Svetlana was the lead on coordinating the speakers and faculty and startups. And so I would say in the run-up to the event, it starts a little slow, but by the time you're about a month out, honestly, it's almost full-time. For the core team. And then eventually the entire office gets involved for us. I mean, all our tech managers are actively reaching out to their contacts, to attract an audience. And then the entire staff, it's really all hands on deck the day of the event. We usually practically close the office. So we have people, for instance, one year we had to rent a guest parking lot and we needed a van to get from the parking lot to the event site. And so two folks from the office went and got trained on how to drive the university's turtle top, and they ran that van in a circle the whole day. Just to the point of it being all hands on deck, it really is. Although I will say it's kind of a nice community builder for the office, too. I like to think we all kind of have fun with it. It's a time commitment for your presenters. It is. I mean, some presenters can only speak for their time slot and then they leave, but usually we ask that they stay for at least their entire session, and then either the networking break or the lunch that will follow the session so they can get some of that benefit. But, this is kind of a big ask during the academic year, so we're always conscious of the time we're asking them to give up as well. And then budget constraints, that's another significant factor. It costs money to host a showcase. The food is likely your largest expense, and then followed closely by the venue where you're hosting it. It would be the second largest. But there are other possible expenses, a photographer, renting a parking lot, you may or may not need to do that. Vendor charges, if you need somebody to help you with website set up or registration page set up. Travel, if it's an away event and you're helping foot some of those costs. Design and printing. So not all of them are necessarily charges that are costs that you have to commit to. You don't necessarily need a photographer. Maybe you get an intern to do it. Maybe your venue is someplace on your campus that's free. But even with getting around the cost, there are significant costs. So my advice there would be to, as much as you can, ballpark or guesstimate what your total charges might be for the event to see if you're going to need to set that off with either registration fees, which we'll talk about later, or sponsorships, and also just so there's not stickers later. And then the third thing I was going to mention is not so much a challenge in the negative sense, but your event isn't happening in a vacuum on campus, and so especially if you do it a few times and it gets some higher visibility and people are aware of it, it's just to be aware of some of the sensitivities that then kind of come to the forefront, too. It can be things like making sure that you're not having your event on the same day as another event on your campus that, you wouldn't necessarily want to draw away from. Or, when you're composing your list of presenters, are you kind of, for internal reasons, covering all the departments or institutes or units that you would need to so that no one feels slighted? Or are you giving credit, in different places where it's needed? And again, this is not to say that that's a reason you wouldn't host a showcase, but just people will be aware of your event, and some of the usual sensitivities will come into play, and I would just say to be aware of that.
Great. Thanks, Nicole. Those are really some great points, and there are a myriad of considerations even before you start. So on this slide, I just wanted to make some final notes to consider in deciding whether to have a showcase. The first is determining whether you have institutional support. So when there's enthusiasm for administration and around campus, the chances of having a successful showcase increase dramatically. And also, it's worth looking at your pipeline to determine the extent and diversity of your university research and startup pipeline. And this is something that we'll discuss further on the next slide. And finally, make sure that you differentiate your event with those happening elsewhere on campus and perhaps locally and regionally as well. For example, if you live in an area with a lot of events like business plan competitions or research symposia, you'll want to make sure that you clearly communicate how this tech showcase is different from those. Okay, Svetlana, here, once you decided to proceed with the showcase at University of Illinois, can you tell us a little bit about what went into determining its format?
Sure. As Nicole mentioned earlier, between our two institutions, we host just about every flavor of showcases. And there's no right or wrong format. It is really what works the best for your institution, and even that changes over time. For example, all until last year, we hosted Share the Vision as a solo event because on our campus in Urbana-Champaign, because it was important to raise the profile of the campus, its innovative research and entrepreneurial momentum, which we feel gets overlooked sometimes because of our geography. When Lisa first broached the idea of a joint event, which then became Illinois Ignite, it made sense to branch out and do a joint event with other institutions. And as Lisa mentioned earlier, the Ignite, with Ignite, we had Northwestern, University of Chicago, two University of Illinois institutions, and IIT. Location, some considerations are, or rather really the main considerations are convenience for faculty versus ease of access for VCs, and also impact on event budget. We hosted the first few Shared Division events at home on our Champaign-Urbana campus. But then to attract more VCs to the event, we had a mini version of a Shared Division event 1 year in Silicon Valley, and we flew only a few faculty to San Francisco for that event. For that San Francisco event, we partner with the University of Illinois Foundation and their West Coast annual December event for the alumni. And faculty presented, faculty presentations preceded the foundation event, and the talks were well attended by prominent West Coast VCs, and we benefited from collocating and co-timing with the established event. And Lisa was actually one of the main organizers of the San Francisco Shared Division event. Lisa, do you want to add more?
Yeah, I think that was, our first sort of away game experience, and I think it worked really well. As Svetlana mentioned, being able to draft on an already existing alumni event that happened in the area was really useful, and it was also a way to kind of get more of an audience with the investor community that may not have been so it wasn't as convenient for them to travel to Champaign. So the key there, I think, was, taking out a prominent number of faculty, kind of establishing a beachhead with this type of event. And, again, since it's an away game, if you can sort of leverage infrastructure that's already there, that's a huge advantage.
Thank you. The Illinois Ignite event was hosted in Chicago at the Big Ten Conference Center. It's a 5-minute Uber ride from major airport O'Hare, and the external participants, the VCs, the corporate partners really appreciated the closeness to the airport
and the location. It basically made for one long working day. However, the event was a remote location for all participating universities, even for those in Chicago, and required a longer time commitment for by faculty and startups. In terms of event timing, another example of partnering was our 2017 Share the Vision event in Champaign, when we joined forces with a local community festival called Pygmalion. And Pygmalion has several themes, the music, food, arts, and so on, and it also has a tech component. And the thinking was to expand the appeal of university startups and research with the local community and attract additional audience. However, after hosting the event, we decided that we did not see much in terms of cross-pollination among our two events, possibly because events were so different in flavor. In terms of frequency, on average, we hosted events every 18 months. We wanted to balance between having long enough time between the events to have enough new research to showcase against having the event often enough to build recognition and branding. In addition, as mentioned earlier, the event does require large time commitment on the tech transfer offices, faculty, especially if the event is hosted away, which was the case for Illinois Ignite. In terms of a theme, to capture the breadth and strength of the research institutions, you may want to consider running parallel tracks and for Ignite and most of the shared division events, we had two parallel tracks, one being life sciences and the other being pretty much everything else but engineering-related disciplines. And in particular for Ignite, we had the oncology and neuroscience sessions, and in the engineering disciplines, we had materials, networking, security, data analytics, robotics, and so on. There was one instance when we only had one track, and that was for one of our shared division events last year when we had a track on intersectional engineering and life sciences in light of the new engineering-based College of Medicine. So basically, you pick your themes and frequency so that it makes sense to your institution.
Great. Lisa, would you mind maybe talking about how some of these factors played a role in your organization of the next event?
Oh, sure. So this was the Northwestern event that we mentioned previously that we hosted in San Francisco during the week of the big January healthcare conference. So again, here we were able to take advantage of both the audience that is drawn to that event and the fact that Northwestern is lucky to have space in Union Square in San Francisco. So that's very close to actually the center of activity for that conference. And so, another example of us sort of drafting on some infrastructure that already exists. I think for that conference, our biggest concern was distinguishing ourselves amongst the many other events that take place that week. So I'm sure if folks have been out there, everyone from all the law firms to the companies to the VC firms have all sorts of cocktail events and dinners going on in the evening. And so while we, thought there would be, a lot of interest in our event, we were really worried about competing with those events. So what we needed to do was build a format to really draw attention. So we made sure to feature speakers with really high profiles, folks that appear in the public and the popular press, I should say, and then made sure to make a point that our event would enable networking with the Northwestern startups. And so those two factors worked really well, and we can hit on this in terms of when we discuss in more detail outreach, but being able to sort of having some well-known names and then the opportunity to network with startups really helped us organize that showcase out in San Francisco.
Great. Svetlana, would you mind talking a little bit more
about add-ons? Sure. Having add-on events at your showcase, whether in the form of a partnership, partnering sessions, posters, or startup presentations and demos, can be a powerful way to further entice VCs and corporate partners to attend and engage with presenters. We found that the external attendees took advantage of the partnering sessions to build relationships with faculty and startups. We also found that add-on events increase the workload of preparing for the event as the communication complexity increases exponentially when you have more group of people to coordinate with. I was wondering if Nicole wanted to elaborate more on that aspect.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, the kind of, I guess, underlying thing here is that with any of these showcases, we're trying to give our VC and corporate attendees as much value as possible for their time. So getting in as many speakers as possible, you know, exposure to as many speakers, as many startups. And these add-ons are another way of enhancing that and bringing people to the event. But as Svetlana says, it is true that they do, on the back end, really increase the work. So, for instance, one year we asked student startups to participate in a poster session. And we thought, you know, the event wasn't structured to have them on the main agenda, but this way they could have exposure to this audience, you know, in this other format. And the attendees really responded positively, and the students did too, but on the back end it was a lot more work because we had at least 15 or so student startups. That's 15 or so extra groups that you need to coordinate with, making sure they all have the same information, making sure logistically they know where to be and when, and that you get the information you need from them. It's almost, some of these are almost like organizing a separate concurrent event, you know, alongside the main event. They're still great to do, but just to be aware of when you decide to do them, you know, what that will add on top of it.
Thank you. In terms of speakers, as mentioned earlier, our focus in hosting the event was to showcase opportunities emerging from university research. So we always had a mixture of faculty presenting and startups being represented at the event in some format. And so our format have evolved. In 2012, when we first hosted Share the Vision, we had a two-day event, and faculty were presenting one day, startups were presenting the other day, and that sort of evolved into shortening the event to one day, and we had separate sessions for startups in our nearby research park and enterprise works, the incubator. And then we sometimes play with the format where we had startups sort of intertwined with faculty presenters. So we experimented with various formats, and I think they pretty much worked. We, I think, agreed that perhaps having a one-day event as opposed to a two-day event worked, at least when the event was in Champaign. External speakers, keynotes, and panel speakers, we considered having external speakers, and we pretty much had them as a means of securing attendance of some of the desired key attendees by having VCs and corporate partners and funding agency representatives participate in a panel or give a keynote. And when planning for our VCs, we wanted to be cognizant of the fact that when choosing the topic for a VC panel, to make sure that they are addressing the diverse audience, which is VCs and faculty and startups and external participants.
Great. Lisa, maybe could you comment on these same features for the next event?
Oh, sure. Actually, I was going to comment on it for not only the Northwestern San Francisco event, but also for Illinois Ignite. As Svetlana and Nicole were mentioning, you know, the partnering component of a showcase can be, you know, very complicated to organize, but it also can be, I think, you know, a really important way to draw folks in. One thing that struck me about the Ignite event that we held at the end of September was that how the partnering sessions that were organized actually spawned a lot more sort of impromptu partnering sessions. So even though Illinois Ignite, this multi-institution event that we held close to O'Hare Airport, was a remote location, sort of an away game for everybody and probably a little bit more hassle for the faculty than typical, what we found is that at the end we had a lot of our faculty coming in and commenting on how much they appreciated being able to network and partner sort of on the spot. So I think those sort of add-ons are really important draws for folks. For the Northwestern event in San Francisco, having that networking component with the startups actually turned out to be almost the highlight of the event. Even though we were careful to have faculty with really high profile giving talks, what we found is that probably sort of the atmosphere of a cocktail event or something similar really facilitates that networking. And we almost had to sort of draw people away forcibly to come in and listen to the speaker. So it was almost a double-edged sword in terms of you need sort of those prominent names to advertise your event, but then sort of a short format like we had out in San Francisco, it was the networking component, that sort of add-on that I think was the ultimately most successful part of that event.
Great. So why don't we zero in on some of the points that were just discussed. Lisa, could you maybe describe some of the thoughts behind determining who your target audience is and maybe also offer some pointers in terms of managing your attendee list?
So I think for all the showcases that we've been discussing, our primary target audience are folks who can help us translate our university technologies out to the public. So nominally potential investors, or mainly I should say, potential investors and corporate partners. But what we found is that reaching out to funding agencies and local and state organizations has also been a really valuable offshoot in terms of raising the visibility. And so, including those types of attendees as part of your target audience, I think, can be a real driver for the showcase. And so then in terms of initially getting sort of the word out and getting people to commit to attending, I think you can really leverage the rich university network. I mean, I think we're all really lucky to be sitting in an ecosystem that has really great channels to tap into. So everyone from your corporate relations and corporate engagement teams to your alumni organizations, to your development organizations, those folks, I think, have always been, very enthusiastic and cooperative because I think it gives folks sort of a reason to reach out. Oftentimes, just as we as tech managers are looking for reasons to reach out to partners to tell people about new technologies, having something tangible like I'd like to invite you to a showcase turns out to be a pretty kind of powerful opener. And so, taking advantage of the networks that you have within the university and enabling them to make some of those initial contacts works really well. Sort of obvious contacts that can be called through places like LinkedIn, materials from trade shows and events. Oftentimes you'll find speaker lists and speaker contact lists on the web from VC events. And, for those initial outreach where we're sort of doing a cold call, big mass email, oftentimes those types of lists turn out to be really useful. We've gone back and forth in terms of our showcases being invitation only versus broad advertising. And so I think, we start out with that being invitation only or sort of invitation geared. And then I think as the event grows closer and we can kind of see the balance of our attendee list, we will sometimes include what you might consider broad advertising, where people start to include the information about the event on their LinkedIn profile. We'll have the different offices tweet out information. So it really kind of widens the potential audience there. And then on this last slide, as I mentioned, the event is really a really great reason to reach out and kind of bolster your network or expand your network. So those initial get the information out types of outreach, mass mail is fine. But really what brings attendees to the event and what gets people to commit is really that personal outreach. And so, I think having people go out to their individual networks and, oftentimes it takes multiple invitations, but getting that sort of personal touch in there is really critical. And so some of those add-ons that we described in the previous slide where you're offering partnering sessions or sometimes offering a speaking slot on a panel, or what we've oftentimes found is, offering or asking people if they'd be willing to moderate a session are really great ways to kind of add personalization to the invitation. we'll talk a little bit about the scheduling of outreach later in the webinar. But, you know, just having that as part of your plan in terms of how you're planning your messaging, how you're going to schedule out those kind of broad information outreach. And then definitely you don't want to end up spamming people, so have an opt-out option so that you don't overload people on those sort of initial broadcasts.
Thanks. And now for one of the most important components of a showcase, the talent. Svetlana, could you share your thoughts on choosing and then working with the presenters?
Sure. So your institution, when you're considering hosting an event, probably has an abundance of faculty with prominent research. So what are some of the practical considerations in narrowing down the list? For Ignite and for Share the Vision events, our focus was on hosting the events that showcase a mix of up-and-coming entrepreneurial faculty, so faculty with translational bent, key opinion leaders, and faculty with proven record of success to build some credibility. Some of the considerations in selecting speakers or narrowing down the speakers was their availability, of course, and their enthusiasm. Of course, their relationship with Tech Transfer Office was important. We looked at faculty that do have relationship with our office and have research that do have translational bend. When we host events, we consider balancing for gender and diversity. And then really when picking up topics for the event and which tracks to have, we plan to amplify our institution's priorities. In terms of a last bullet, have a backup plan. It's be flexible because stuff happens and things go sometimes as unplanned, I guess. And that may mean having last-minute requests by faculty to swap the time of the presentation, not having presentations until the minute they have to present. Some faculty still being on the road 5 minutes before they are scheduled to present, and that it was evident at the Ignite Illinois event when we had all our presenters driving from their various locations. So, and we also had an instance where a faculty didn't show up. So those are all the things that you want to be sort of cognizant of in terms of, yeah, these things may happen, and it's not uncommon, and just be flexible, and that's it. I don't know if anyone else wants to add anything more anecdotal to this. To the backup plan.
I was just going to make a joke that no one can use traffic as an excuse in Champaign, but in Chicago, we can't.
That's true. That is true.
So once you have your list of presenters, you know, you usually try to confirm your list way in advance of the event. I mean, it can be anywhere from a year to 9 months out of the event that you at least try to have your basic group of presenters in place. But then there's a long planning phase and communication that happens, you know, during that time. And so one thing we found when we first started, I think, hosting Share the Vision, you know, I used to think it was best to give all of the faculty all of the information up front in one big email that just laid everything out so that they had it and could refer back to it. I was trying to be efficient and make it convenient for folks, but the truth is it was information overload, and folks would lose track or they couldn't find that email. So it was not efficient, even though I was trying to be. And so what we've kind of come to over time is that, you know, we start with very broad strokes and we get more specific, you know, as we get closer to the event. And so, you know, in the beginning, the initial request is just very general. Here's in a very general way what the event is and what we're asking you to do. And, you know, we might say we're asking you to talk in the morning or the afternoon, but we're probably not even specific as to exact time yet at that point. And then as time goes on, it narrows down and narrows down. The other reason to have multiple points of, you know, being in touch with your faculty about the event is sometimes that second email about it a couple of months later or the third email will actually remind them that, oops, they can't actually participate. There was something else going on. And, you know, it's better to get that feedback earlier in the process, obviously, than later, although it could happen at any point. Determining a point person for communication, you know, whatever works best for your office, but it may be that you want one tech manager to coordinate all of the communication to faculty, or it might be that the tech manager that works with the specific faculty coordinates the communication. You know, either way can work. I think the important thing, though, is that one person sort of draft up the emails that get sent out, even though the others can cut and paste them and use them as their own or put them in their own voice. You do want to be sure that, you know, especially if you're dealing with 30 different presenters and 10 different startups or whatever, you want to know that everyone has that same basic information. The third bullet point was actually Svetlana's brainchild, I think, the last year of the vision, which was quite simply, we used to rely on folks to put the events on their own calendar or for their admin to put the events on their calendar. That, you know, Svetlana had the simple but awesome idea that we should just send the calendar request ourselves, and then kind of, on the one hand, we can look to see if they accepted it, so we know it's definitely on their calendar, and, you know, we kind of have a firmer sense of their commitment. And also, we know that it's on their calendar, and hopefully it'll be less likely that they'll accidentally double-book something. And then I was going to ask Heather to talk some about the AV requirements and managing all the slide decks, because, again, if you have 30, you know, plus presentations going on, that's a big thing all in itself.
Yeah, and that's more just about being clear with your event space, what the AV requirements are and what's available. Of course, you're going to have presenters that have Macs and some have PCs, and so you have to make sure that you're clear about what the AV situation is for your particular location. Managing the slide decks can work a couple of different ways depending on if it's just your own institution is hosting the event. Of course, it's a lot easier to have that one person that's collecting all the slides, asking for them prior to the date, and getting them preloaded onto whatever you're going to use to present. That doesn't ever all happen. You're going to have presenters coming in, flying in 5-10 minutes before their speaking time with their presentation loaded on a jump drive. One of the things we did at the last year of the vision that was very handy was we had a spreadsheet of all of our presenters out at our registration desk and someone out there checking people off as they came in, grabbing their jump drives and actually running them back to the person who was running those slide decks and getting those things loaded on the computer. That helped us identify in advance who hadn't shown up and who we should be looking for and emergent situations and stuff like that. When if Ignite with multiple institutions involved, it helps to have a point person for each institution that can manage their own people's slide decks and make sure that we're all putting them in a place where we can get to them the day of the event. We use Dropbox, put them in there, and then the day of the event, we just simply went into Dropbox and put them on the computers where the presentations were being loaded from. So I think just working that out, what works best for your own event is what you'll need to identify in advance.
And then this slide is very simply an example of an email that we sent to our faculty with the presentation guidelines, you know, with what we're asking them to do at the event. This is not the first email we'd send. Again, this is a little further downstream when we're starting to get a little more specific about what we're asking for. I would say that, you know, with some of our faculty who are maybe more familiar with this type of presentation to an audience of VCs or corporate folks, usually we send the email and they know what to do, and there's not a whole lot of follow-up about that or hand-holding about the presentation. But with faculty who are newer to this type of event, you know, again, we send them the email. Everyone has the same info, but maybe a tech manager would follow up and, you know, offer to work with them on their slides or talk them through a little more detailed way, you know, what we're looking for in the presentation.
Great. So I think at this point it'd be useful to get an idea of an overall timeline leading up to hosting a showcase. And Nicole and Heather, you know, it was such a pleasure to work with both of you on Illinois Ignite, and I could see how efficient you guys worked and really believe you guys are masters at logistics. Could you outline some of the key milestones and relative target dates leading up to the event?
Yeah, well, thank you. So this is a rough timeline of, you know, and not every point is on here, but some of the major ones. But about a year out, you definitely want to be, you know, choosing your location, because especially, you know, valuable locations kind of book up fast. So you want to be sure that you've locked that down. Another thing that you start to do about a year out is choose a name. And this is a slight tangent, but I was going to mention that choosing a name on its own is not as straightforward as it seems. You know, with Ignite, it took us a while. There are only so many synonyms for innovation and entrepreneurship and technology, and a lot of them have been used. So we would come up with a name, and then we'd Google it, and, you know, two other places were already using that name. One of our folks actually made up a word that was a combination of two other words, and that was in use. So when choosing a name, just a side note, definitely Google what you've chosen and see who else is maybe already using it. Some of the rest is obvious. About 9 months out, we send the save the date. And Heather, actually, if you could talk about what starts to happen when you get close to the event.
As far as the hotel?
Yeah.
And, that usually happens about four or five months out, reserving a block of rooms for people attending, and depending if you're doing it away, of course, for your presenters and your faculty that are attending. We do that. You kind of have to gauge how big your event is, do a block of rooms based on what you think your attendance might be. Usually hotels don't have a problem with that because they'll just drop off. Usually with most hotels, it's about a month out. But you want to communicate that in advance and make sure that you know what that time frame is. And a lot of the times it's negotiable as well. They'll add an extra week and leave your block open if you don't have people that are taking advantage of that situation. As far as closing registration, I think it's more, we say close, but that's probably more to internal folks. But you always want to leave it open for your VCs and corporate attendees, even if it's last minute.
Your catering count?
Oh, confirming your counts, I'm sorry. That's going to depend a lot on your caterer and your event location, what they need that time frame to be. Usually, typically, every event we've done so far, it's been about 2 weeks out. You have to give final counts. And so that will drive when you'll close your registration, because you want to be able to take care of that in advance.
I would add to that when it does come time to confirm your final count, you will still be guesstimating your count, because especially if the event is free, there's no registration cost, there's drop-off, you know, and it can be anywhere from, I don't know, what would you say, 35%?
About 30%, yeah.
Yeah. So you are still ballparking a little bit. And I was going to circle back briefly to outreach as well, because, you know, you send the save the date around 9 months out, and then we really begin targeted kind of the mass mails around 6 months out, and then usually when we do the mass mailing, we do them as sort of support for the personal outreach, because as Lisa mentioned before, the personal outreach is really, you know, critical in bringing in the attendees. But the mass mail emailer can be the structure that they use and to maybe put a personal note on top of that, you know, and forward that out. I would say that what's always funny is that there's no perfect time. I mean, we heard from people that they wish they had heard about the event earlier so they could get it on the calendar, and we've heard from people that we started talking about it too early and they weren't able to focus on it yet. So really, you just have to what we kind of settled on is starting early and doing it in a scheduled way so that whenever people want to or feel like they're ready to kind of focus on it, they can.
Great. This outline of the timeline is really useful. And I think before you even start to, you know, want to get up and market the event, there's some good things to have in place prior to that. So one thing would be to have a live website, and the obvious benefits being that you'd have an active URL to share and that your event could be searchable. And for Illinois Ignite, we had some key pieces of information on our site from the start and continue to develop the content as the event evolved. Some things to be sure to include on the website at the outset might be things like having rough timing of the event, noting general timing, session tracks, some key speakers and talk titles. And you can see, it's kind of blurry, but there is an example. It's just a screenshot of our Illinois Ignite event schedule on the right there of the slide. In addition, it might be worth trying to lock in some high-profile faculty speakers as well, or perhaps some startups that have built some buzz or are active in a hot area. They can help draw a larger crowd to your event. And finally, if you're drawing people to your website, it's nice to have a live registration site. And beyond capturing the obvious fields like name, title, company, and email address, you may also want to consider some additional information to gather at this point. So, for example, it could be worth getting an understanding of their areas of interest, and it could be something general like therapeutics or maybe something more specific like immuno-oncology. Also, you might be interested in knowing their interest in partnering with a startup or meeting a faculty presenter. And another thing that you might want to capture is allow them to categorize their company type. For example, are they a venture group, a law firm, a vendor, a startup, part of the university, or anything else? And I think these fields can actually be quite helpful in the planning stages. So, for example, knowing where people's interests lie can help you get a sense of whether you need to bump up registration numbers in a particular area where there may have less registrations. Or knowing who's interested in partnering facilitates targeting follow-up communication. And understanding the makeup of your registrants can be good to know, as your faculty and startups will inevitably ask, how many VCs are signed up for this event? So those are really great to have. Those are great things to know. And so if we just could maybe continue along with this registration piece, I think it would be good to dive into some details. Nicole and Heather, have you considered the effect of registration fees?
Yeah, so Illinois Ignite, there was no fee. For Share the Vision, we've done it with and without registration fees, and I think we've done registration fees for two of the events. And I honestly don't come down on either side of the fence about whether I think we should or should not have them. I mean, there are the benefits, of course, is that it offsets your costs, and another benefit of having them is that the folks who register have demonstrated a little firmer commitment. They're a little less likely to no-show, although you will still get no-shows. One of the drawbacks or considerations is you need a mechanism to process the payments and refunds. And if you have access to that already, maybe something else on your campus that you can tap into, that's great. If you need to set that up, that might kind of eat into your, you know, revenue that you're generating. And it's also, there is time involved in managing all the questions around the fees and managing the fee structure itself. So that's a consideration as well. Now, when I say fee structure, when we did registration fees, you have internal attendees and external attendees. And do you charge them the same rate or not? You know, what we did was to charge, I think, external attendees $100, internal attendees $25. We didn't want to make it prohibitive, but we did want folks to have kind of skin in the game, and we wanted to help offset our costs. But having said that, you know, it never plays out neatly. So then it's a question of, well, who's external? We had folks from our research park ask if they could get kind of the internship. We've had faculty presenters ask if their students could attend for free because, you know, they just want to hear their presentation. We've had alumni ask if they could get the internal rate, which we actually was a great idea we wound up doing. But, you know, it's not that there's right or wrong answers to any of these questions. It's that there will be a lot of questions. So there's what you charge, and then there's also free, because a certain number of your folks are obviously you're not going to charge your speakers, your internal organizers, but then how far do you extend that umbrella? So our corporate development folks have partnered with us in helping bring in attendees, so of course we don't charge them. But it becomes very gray. Where do you draw the line? Who is paying and who isn't paying? You know, there's a lot to think about there. And then Heather has always managed the mechanics of the registration fees. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we've done it a couple different ways. We have I don't think they do it anymore particularly, but conference services, which is part of our online and continuing education department here at UIUC, we use their services, and they kind of manage that whole process, the registration, taking fees, any refunds that were happening, the badges, printing badges and all that, which we'll get into a little bit later as well. And then we've done it ourselves using our IT services here on campus, with something that they call Form Builder, but we built out that registration site ourselves, managed all the payments and the refunds. Like Nicole was saying, it is a little bit more work. You do end up covering some of your costs, but you have to make sure that you have legal language in there that kind of defines what the criteria is for that. And then some of the tickets, make sure that they're non-refundable after a certain date, especially if you're trying to cover some of your or offset some of your costs. When you do give that final number for catering or whatever your costs are trying to that you're trying to offset will be, just have that in the fine print. The cutoff date is non-refundable after a certain point.
Great. Svetlana, would you be able to talk a little bit about the agenda and timing?
Sure. So when it comes to length of each presentation slot, we opted out for about 15 to 20 minutes. So we wanted to give presenters enough time to be able to make an interesting presentation and have enough meat in their presentation and have enough time for question and answer session. But at the same time, we wanted to cram in as many presenters as possible to make it worthwhile for VCs and other external participants to attend. So it was kind of that balance, and we ended up mostly 20 minutes, sometimes 15 minutes. Role of the moderator, as expected, you know, they would be introducing the speakers, and they would have a few questions queued up. And we, in addition to having a moderator in each of the sessions, we also had a tech manager. So we had a person sort of paired with a moderator to keep track of time. And we had these cards, you know, showing 3 minutes or 1 minute, sort of a timer, just to give presenters a heads up, because we wanted to run the events on time, because there were parallel sessions, and we had participants move between the two sessions. Include breaks for networking. People like to interact, and, you know, informal networking and partnering sessions that Lisa mentioned earlier were happening during lunchtime and during networking, and we wanted to enable that. And so our networks were about 20 minutes, and we always had to end up rounding up people to get back to the conference rooms and hear the rest of the presentations. Don't overschedule lunch. Again, it's sort of a balance between having enough time to network and maybe having your keynote presenter during lunchtime and having enough time to eat, with sort of keeping it short enough to keep the events moving. Next bullet, consider attendees' travel time. I think when we were in Champaign, we saw some drop-off of attendees in the afternoon, so we tended to end the event a little earlier, start a little earlier in the day and end a little earlier to give people enough time to get to the airports and get out of town. I think for Chicago, we started a little later because we knew there were a lot of local people driving to the event, and then we ended up a little later in the day with a networking and cocktail session. If you have simultaneous track, be conscious of who is speaking at what time, because some sessions and some speakers may attract more audience than the others. So to keep it sort of fair to all the presenters, you may want to route people, especially your internal or university people, to the session that's less busy. Keep events on schedule. That was also important, and as I mentioned, we had tech managers sort of keeping the speakers moving, and sometimes we had to cut the question and answer session short. That's all, sort of.
Okay.
Do you know if anyone else has anything else?
I think one other final note might be just that we, with the organizers, sharing mobile phone numbers was really helpful. We could quickly text one another if someone was missing or if things aren't moving along as we were expecting. Okay, let's see. Let's go to the next slide here. Venue and catering. Nicole and Heather, could you tell us a little bit about the different venues that you've chosen and perhaps shed some light on additional details to bear in mind when it comes to logistics?
Yeah, so I think one of the best pieces of advice I can give on logistics is actually in the run-up to the event, just keep mentally walking through the day. Heather and I do this together all the time. And first, put yourself in the position of the attendee and just walk through the day. And then put yourself in the position of you as the organizer and walk through the day step by step. And this will help you catch all the little stuff that maybe escaped notice, like we need a sign here, we need more staffing at the registration table, we need someone to be on hand to help folks get from point A to point B. All those little things, when you kind of imagine yourself as the person attending the event or what's happening the day of, it just kind of really helps capture that. In terms of the venue, I think the considerations are, you know, does it have all the room types you'll need, a presentation rooms, breakout rooms, small meeting rooms, lunch, you know, what do you need of those and does it have it?
Parking.
Parking. Yeah. Does it have parking? And if not, can you compensate for that by renting a guest lot or something like that? Be aware of the fire code. Heather, do you want to talk about that?
About our, So at Ignite, we had to be very cognizant of our fire code. The space was a little tight and actually had to end up asking some of our internal people to step out as needed because the center where we were at, we're very aware of how many people were in and out. So just make sure that that's communicated with your venue in advance. You know what your limit is, and then have a mechanism to keep track of that the day of.
Honestly, it may not even be obvious. I mean, the Ignite venue, the Big Ten Center, never looked over full. It was always just nicely full and seemed like there was great momentum. But we were at a couple of points over the fire code. And as Heather said, it was seamless to the external attendees, but we did have to ask a couple of internal folks to step out. Tips for working with a caterer. I would say, you know, buffet lunches are more forgiving than box lunches. Box lunch, you really need to know your exact count, which you probably won't. But again, buffet is more forgiving. Verify everything and get it in writing. And I know Heather has a story here.
Yeah. So when you've got your we had an incident happen and we had everything ordered and all the food and everything was buffeted like we usually do because it is, you know, like Nicole said, there's a little more wiggle room involved in that. But I didn't think we needed to verify what kind of cutlery and dishware we would be. I figured it was catering. It would be, you know, an event type situation, but it ended up being hot soup and paper bowls, and it just came across wrong. So just make sure that everything is written down and that you're signing off on something and that your caterer knows exactly what you need. If paper bowls are the way you want to go, then just make sure that that's communicated clearly and is in writing so there's no ambiguity.
But actually, Heather, along those lines, can you talk also about getting a schematic in advance from your venue?
Yeah, so from your event venue, we also had some
What a schematic is.
Yeah, a schematic is just the layout of the room or rooms that you'll be using, exactly how you want any chairs or tables set up, where your signage is going, where your microphones are, where your computer is laid out. You should be able to get from any venue exactly where those things will be so that you can walk through your space. Even if it's just in your head, you can walk through your space and know exactly where your chairs are, your tables are, your microphones, and where you need to put signage and where you need to put your registration table. All of that should be laid out in advance, usually via a contract or something that you both agree on prior to.
In terms of a photographer, we've done it both with and without, you know, and it's really up to you. If you need one, when we first started doing Share the Vision, we would get a photographer for the entire day. It was expensive, and actually we wound up with so many photos that honestly we really never used, so we narrowed it down in subsequent events. Sometimes I've had an intern do it, or when we've used a professional photographer, we've just asked them to come in for very discrete time periods so we could get a few photos that we knew we would maybe some great crowd shots or that we knew we would use when advertising the event in the future. Live streaming, actually, I'll just touch on briefly. We've at one point experimented with live streaming Share the Vision for folks who didn't feel like they could make it to Champaign but did maybe just want to hear one or two presentations. We thought there might be significant interest in that. Surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, I don't know, there was not that much interest in it. People either wanted to come, or if they couldn't come but wanted to connect with a faculty, they just asked to be connected to that faculty. The live streaming, even when we had our IT department help us with it, was still tricky, and so, you know, and not perfect, actually. And the other thing that came up with live streaming was we did that at a Share the Vision where we were charging registration fees, and then the question was, well, what do you charge for the live stream? You know, you don't want it to be so cheap that suddenly everybody wants to live stream and not come.
And are your presenters agreeable for being videoed that way in live streaming? Because we did have one that didn't particularly want that situation, too. So
that's absolutely right. We had to turn off the camera for one person. So, so live streaming, I think, is probably not something we're planning on doing, you know, in future events, but it's not to say a person couldn't. And then finally, there were some, kind of additional logistical don't forget in terms of badges, signs, and collateral. Hey, Sonia, could you advance the slide? Oh, thank you. Sorry. And I think, Sonia, were you going to talk to some of these?
I think Heather was going to first talk about maybe the badges.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so regarding badges, I think it's helpful to close out registration in advance to allow for the printout of those badges prior to the event. However, you will have people showing up at the event on that day, so be sure to have your extras for that situation. We had printed off badges for this last event about a week out. And then, of course, there's the last-minute registrants, too, that you do get the day or prior to the day of. And so what I did was just had that all set up and was able to add last-minute ones before we left for our event. And then, like I said, just have some on hand to the day of.
Yeah, and regarding signs, having easels and a variety of signs printed up on poster boards are really helpful for display. For example, we also had digital signs made up because there were TV monitors throughout the venue. And so we just had our event logo rotating with the daily schedule. We had directional signs with maps so that attendees knew where to find specific speaker rooms and meeting rooms and the food. And And you can display the event schedule and acknowledge any sponsors that you might have. And one last thing is if you have tables for startups, it might be worthwhile to create smaller 8x10 signs so that all of the startups have a consistent design, say, with your particular event logo.
And for collateral, I just mean your program or your agenda. That can be as simple or as elaborate as you want and as you have bandwidth for. It can be as simple as just a one-page, agenda. For Share the Vision and Ignite, we made it slightly expanded. For Ignite, we had the agenda and bound into that as well. We had short descriptions for each of the startups and with their URLs so people wanted to find them after. For Share the Vision, we would give a little more information on the faculty speakers, kind of overviews of their research areas, maybe some of their honors and awards, what startup companies they have. But again, it doesn't have to be that elaborate, but that is an option.
And just the final thing before we move on to the next slide, I just wanted to reiterate a couple of resources that I was fairly new to the technology showcase planning, and a couple of things I noticed that the U of I team and Lisa really knew about was just one, I think Heather already mentioned this, but having a centralized place to store working documents and logos and registration links, that was really great for just collecting in an organized fashion. And secondly, having a talented graphic artist or web designer that you can use at a relatively inexpensive rate is really helpful. I think once we had decided on our name for our event, the graphic artist came up with really creative designs, and I think she was able to elevate the look of our event and make it look great from a marketing standpoint. And Lisa, are there any notes that you'd like to share to wrap up?
Yeah, maybe just to close things out, I think the big question after the showcases is always, well, how do you measure success? And so after our story about the fire code at Illinois Ignite, one measure of success might be whether or not you hit the fire code. But other than that, it's really a multifaceted issue. You likely won't have hard metrics such as this particular showcase led to X number of licenses and launched Y number of startups. Instead, as I think I mentioned earlier in the webinar, the showcase really becomes one of your really important tools to get these things to happen, to get these licenses and startups launched. You'll raise the visibility both for the university in general and for specific technologies. You'll see new relationships build, and you'll expand the network so that the showcase becomes one of the signatures for your office so that they really help expand the TTO's footprint on campus and becomes another way for you to highlight value within the university system. Now, you will see, and I think we've seen through Share the Vision and hopefully from Illinois Ignite and from our Northwestern event in San Francisco, there are, conversations that start with folks that will lead to faculty collaborations with corporate partners. There have been examples of seeds of a startup planted at some of the Share the Vision events that have led to the actual launch of startups. But you have to remember it'll be sort of an integrated effort over time where you'll see the results from these types of showcases. So to close things out, I just wanted to thank everyone for attending this webinar. Definitely want to extend my thanks to my wonderful colleagues Nicole, Svetlana, Heather, and Sonia. And then please encourage the audience.